The common misrepresentation of Israel's birth is that the United Nations created Israel, the world was in favor of this move, and that the U.S. governmental establishment supported its creation. All these assumptions are blatantly incorrect. The Zionists performed a global theater of deception in order to accomplish their merciless objective of bringing a Zionist monster to life. You don't believe us? Keep watching. We'll show you the Zionist theater of deception. The backdrop. 1947. The United Nations takes up the question of Palestine, a territory that was administered by the British post-World War I. Approximately 50 years earlier, a movement called Political Zionism had emerged from among the shadows in Europe. Its intention? Create a Zionist state in Palestine by pushing out the Christian and Muslim inhabitants who made up over 95% of the population and owned 99% of the land. Through subsequent years, this imperialist Zionist project grew at the expense of the indigenous populations whom had been living in Palestine for generations. In various written documents cited by numerous Palestinian and Israeli historians, the Zionist elders discussed the Zionist strategy. They would either buy up the land until all the previous inhabitants had emigrated, or, if that were to fail, use violence to force them out. When the buyout effort was able to obtain only a minute percentage of the land, the Zionists created a number of terrorist groups to fight against both the Palestinians and the British. Future Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin later bragged that Zionists had brought terrorism both to the Middle East and to the world at large. Finally, in 1947, the British announced that they would be ending their control of Palestine, which had been arbitrarily created by the League of Nations following World War I. The British then turned the question of Palestine over to the United Nations. By this time, the Zionist immigration and buyout project had increased the Jewish population of Palestine to 30%. And land ownership from 1% to approximately 6%. Since a founding principle of the United Nations was self-determination of peoples, one would have expected the United Nations to support fair democratic elections in which inhabitants could create their own independent country. But the vast majority was ignored and democracy was buried alive. Instead, the Zionists pushed for a General Assembly resolution in which they would be given a disproportionate 55% of Palestine while only being 30% of the total population. Scene 1. Use the loopholes and ambiguity in Resolution 181. November 29th, 1947. Partition Resolution 181 passes. In reality, while the United Nations General Assembly recommended the creation of a Jewish state in part of Palestine, that recommendation was non-binding and never implemented by the Security Council. While this resolution is frequently cited, it was of limited, if any, legal impact. General Assembly resolutions, unlike Security Council resolutions, are not binding on member states. For this reason, the resolution requested that the Security Council take the necessary measures as provided for in the plan for its implementation, which the Security Council never did. Legally, the General Assembly resolution was a recommendation and could not create any states. However, the passage of the General Assembly recommendation did increase the fighting and the violence in Palestine. Scene 2. The United States of America has a moral political dilemma. Solution: buy them out. So you think the American government was all in agreement with the creation of Zionist Israel? Think again. Author Donald Neff reports that Loy Henderson, director of the State Department's Office of Near Eastern and African Affairs, wrote a memo to the Secretary of State warning that such a partition would have to be implemented by force, and emphasized that it was not based on any principle. Loy Henderson goes on to emphasize, proposals for partition are in definite contravention to various principles laid down in the UN Charter, as well as to principles on which American concepts of government are based. These proposals, for instance, ignore such principles as self-determination and majority rule. They recognize the principle of a theocratic racial state and even go so far in several instances as to discriminate on the grounds of religion and race. In 1947, the CIA reported that Zionist leadership was pursuing objectives that would endanger both Jews and the strategic interests of the Western powers in the Near and Middle East. President Harry Truman, however, ignores this expert advice because Truman's political advisor, Clark Clifford, believes that the Zionist vote and their hefty contributions are essential to winning the upcoming presidential elections, and that supporting the partition plan will guarantee that Zionist financial support. As U.S. President Harry Truman says himself, "I am sorry, gentlemen, but I have to answer to hundreds of thousands who are anxious for the success of Zionism. I do not have hundreds of thousands of Arabs among my constituents." Incidentally, Harry Truman wins re-election. The US of A sells itself to the highest bidder, Zionism. Scene 3. The world opposes the Zionist partition plan. Solution: blackmail the world. When it was clear that the partition recommendation did not have the required two-thirds of the UN General Assembly to pass, the Zionists and the United States pushed through a delay in the vote. The Zionists used this period via the recently purchased USA to pressure numerous nations into voting for the recommendation. A number of people later described this campaign. Robert Nathan, a Zionist working for the U.S. government who was particularly active in the Jewish Agency, wrote afterward, "We used any tools at hand, such as telling certain delegations that the Zionists would use their influence to block economic aid to any countries that did not vote the right way." Another Zionist proudly states, "Every clue was meticulously checked and pursued. Not the smallest or the remotest of nations was contacted and wooed. Nothing was left to chance." Financier and longtime presidential advisor Bernard Baruch told France it would lose U.S. aid if it voted against the Zionist partition plan. Top White House executive assistant David Niles organized pressure on Liberia through rubber magnate Harvey Firestone, who told the Liberian president that if Liberia did not vote in favor of the partition, Firestone would revoke this planned expansion in the country. Liberia voted yes. Latin American delegates were told that the Pan-American Highway construction project would be more likely if they voted yes. Delegates' wives received mink coats. Costa Rica's president, José Figueres, reportedly received a blank checkbook. Haiti was promised economic aid if it would change its original vote opposing the partition plan. Before the vote on the partition plan, the Filipino delegate had given a passionate speech against the partition and said he could not believe that the General Assembly would sanction a move that would place the world back on the road to the dangerous principles of racial exclusiveness and to the archaic documents of theocratic governments. Longtime Zionist and U.S. Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter, along with 10 senators and Truman's domestic advisor Clark Clifford, threatened the Philippines. After intense Zionist pressure, 24 hours later, the Filipino delegate votes in favor of the partition. A new vote takes place, and the General Assembly's Resolution 181 passes. Scene 4. Zionist elders give the green light, start the mass killing of poor Palestinians. Over the months following the passage of the Resolution 181 recommendation, the armed wing of the Zionist movement perpetrated a series of massacres and expulsions throughout Palestine. They had forced out almost 500,000 people, implementing a well-orchestrated plan to clear the way for a majority Zionist state. The Zionist military units had stealthily been preparing for war before the United Nations vote and had acquired massive weaponry, some through a widespread network of illicit gun-running operations in the United States under a number of front groups. It was this armed Zionist aggression and the ethnic cleansing of at least 750,000 indigenous Palestinians that created the Zionist state on a land that had been 95% non-Jewish prior to Zionist immigration, and that even after years of heavy immigration remained 70% non-Jewish. At least 33 mass massacres of Palestinian civilians were perpetrated, half of them before even a single Arab army had entered the conflict. Hundreds of villages were depopulated and razed, and a team of cartographers was sent out to give every town, every village, every river, and every hillock a new Hebrew name. All vestiges of Palestinian habitation, history, and culture were to be completely erased from history, an effort that almost succeeded. Final act: call for independence and bulldoze the world. May 14, 1948. The Zionist leadership unilaterally declares the existence of the Zionist State of Israel, citing Resolution 181 as constituting recognition by the United Nations of the right of the Jewish people to establish their state. In reality, the United Nations General Assembly Resolution 181 neither legally partitioned Palestine nor conferred upon the Zionist leadership any legal authority to unilaterally declare the existence of the Zionist State of Israel. It merely recommended that the partition plan be accepted and implemented by the concerned parties. Conveniently, the Zionists took this recommendation as a green light to bulldoze the world. The Zionist theater of deception was finally complete. Since then, the Holy Lands have been drenched in blood and sorrow. The world, in turn, has been left bewildered and mourning this unfortunate tragedy ever since the unfolding of this Zionist theater of deception.